All right, we are back on the Dunked On Basketball podcast, our new twice a week schedule so far, although listenership has been good. So if that keeps up, maybe we will move it to three times a week. But we want to talk to you about Summer League, where Danny and I were both there. I didn't get a chance to watch quite as much as I wanted to live due to Sports Business Classroom, but I've been watching some film over the past week or so. Danny has also been at Team USA practices, so we'll get some of his impressions on that. And then we also have some news items to talk about. Miles Plumlee getting a new contract with Milwaukee, Dirk signing for a little bit more than had been reported, Oklahoma City rescinding the qualifying offer to Deion Waiters. So we'll get into all of that. But first, a reminder, we are sponsored today by SeatGeek. You can get $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase by downloading the SeatGeek app and entering the promo code CAPSPACE in the add a promo code under the settings tab in the app. And then, of course, the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. You can get $50 off that by going to naked.fit/CAPSPACE. And after that long introduction, you now get to talk, Danny.
So let's start with the signing of Miles Plumlee, which was shocking to me just in terms of how it all happened, because we didn't record, but something that I had been thinking about was how the center market had evaporated. And then I don't think we talked about that too much on the pod. And then right after we recorded it, but before it came out, Plumlee gets 4 years, $52 million.
Yeah, it apparently was pretty humid in Miles Plumlee's section of the world because the market did not evaporate for him. This is not exactly starting center money, at least for in this market, but pretty darn close to it. And really, when you consider the fact that he was restricted and that the Bucks had a modicum of leverage, they really are basically paying him like a starter. I think we can both agree that we didn't particularly like this one on a number of levels. The first one for me is they've got $13 million wrapped up in him. They've got $11 million a year, and this is for 4 years for Plumlee, 3 years, or no, I'm sorry, 4 years for Henson as well, because this is an extension for him. So for the next 4 years, they basically have well over $20 million a year wrapped up in the center position. And I don't think they even have one guy that you'd look at as an above average starter. It's kind of, we can call that almost the New Orleans principle, although they've gone even further than New Orleans has in terms of just kind of locking up mediocre talent. And to me, I always felt like the low hanging fruit for this team to improve was to get someone who's a better defensive player at center. And now they really have lost any chance to do that.
I formally propose that we call them Giles Henley, because that is what they are at this point, is it's a combined center. And the biggest problem with both of them in some ways is that they don't answer all of the problems. Each one of them helps in their own ways. I think Henson could be a good rim protector, but I don't think that he's starter caliber. And
yeah, he can't get a defensive rebound and he can't do anything with the ball outside of 5 feet.
Right. And Plumlee, you know, he has some bounce. He's interesting. I think he's a better rebounder, but he's not good enough either to be a starter. And so if you combine the money, even if you account for the lower cap hold for Plumlee, because they do have that for the time being, though we'll see if they actually use that space, that, you know, if they had used that money, if they could do something else with it, they could have been more productive. I mean, I was somebody who stumped for Bismack Biyombo there or various things. And as was the case in various moments of free agency the last 2 years when we've been recording this podcast, there was a lot more leverage that they didn't have to take that situation. And this is, I think, more egregious than Myers Leonard, just because Leonard at least has a unique skill set. And so if you lose him, you know, you can.
And he's also not like Plumlee turns 28, like pretty soon, doesn't he? I mean, if he were 24, I think I'd be okay with this, but he was 24 when he was drafted 4 years ago.
And the other problem with this is that it ties in with something that Milwaukee had done in the rest of their summer, though, of course, spending the money they did on Toledovich and Dellavedova is okay, is that now they have a lot less flexibility in 2017-18. And why that matters is because Michael Carter Williams has a cap hold about $8 million. You know, they could do something with that. But Giannis is going to probably get maxed out or close to it, and his cap hold is only about $7.5 million. And so if you take those holds in, but you do nothing for Greg Monroe, they only have about $13 million in space. And that is not enough to really do anything to make this team substantially better.
Yeah, you could say they just move on from Carter Williams and then they could get up to maybe 20. But even then, I really just wish that they could have opened up max space, even to just overpay one really good starter. Because that's the thing, right? Like, they spent how much? Oh, over $30 million this offseason. and they don't even have like one above average starter to show for it. You know, that to me, I mean, especially given where this team is in terms of the careers of Jabari and Giannis, even Chris Middleton, who's a little bit older, but still has some room to grow. Just like locking in around them now, you don't even really know what Giannis is. Like this whole thing with him at point guard, like might not work. You know, maybe they might actually need a real point guard. You know, maybe Jabari doesn't really learn to shoot the ball, you know, and they need someone who can actually run a pick and roll and shoot threes off the pick and roll. It's just locking in to very mediocre talents very early in the development cycle of this team. And then the other thing is too, you know, if they extend Giannis and they also extend Carter Williams at, you know, hit like $11 million a year or something, or just sign him to free agent contracts next year, now they actually are even getting like kind of close to the tax. So it's just, I really, in none of these moves individually is that bad. I think Dellavedova helps him. I think Teletovic helps him. Plumlee, you know, I think he's a good player, probably should have played more. He was probably their best center last year. But when you look at it in the aggregate, you gave up basically all your flexibility for probably the next 3 or 4 years when you consider that they're going to have to pay Giannis, then they're going to have to pay Jabari, they might have to pay Carter Williams, and they're still going to have all these same guys on the books. The cap's not going up nearly as much as we thought it was. So this is your team now, if you're Milwaukee, unless you're going to kind of throw in some other assets to try to get another starter. So I don't know. I think they really, none of these guys moves the needle for them in the long term for this franchise, unless Giannis or Jabari just become absolute superstars. And even then, you could have become much more of a destination. They got the new arena starting. It's just aiming so low. And I just really, I can't say enough about how just in the aggregate, I'm really disappointed in them spending all of their money in this year when you're just going to get so little value. And we look at now how many teams compared to this year. I mean, I think KP did his study on kind of how many teams have space left. And we were talking about it. Only, I think, 4 teams or so used mid-level exception. Every other team used cap space this year. And so when you compare the few guys that are available on the market this year and then how much money was out there, how many teams used cap space, there's no way it's going to be that many next year because of all the guys who re-signed with bird rights. This is just probably the worst possible market they could have gone into. And now they're locked into guys with contracts from this bad market for the next 4 years, basically. And it's just for a team that had so much promise, I really am kind of disappointed in what ended up happening for these guys.
And one thing to kind of echo without trying to pile on too hard is that they don't have a lot of guys that are on asset contracts. Like that's kind of a difference between them and let's say the Utah Jazz, is that the Jazz, by virtue of also fortunate timing just with Favors and Hayward got maxed out, but that max doesn't look as bad now, that they have that flexibility. Whereas now, like if we assume that they're going to keep Giannis, even if you're looking a year or two down the road, unless somebody really outperforms their expectations, other than maybe, you know, Jabari, it's going to be hard for them to really build that base in. And it's not like they have this cache of extra picks or anything like that. And so it's concerning in that way. And then just from an asset management standpoint for me, they sold the pick that became Patrick McCaw, and they also basically sold, they gave away because they got a little money for it, that trade exception to Cleveland for about $250,000. And so I think that's another kind of asset management. And yeah, it might have been hard to squeeze that for a little bit more, but if you're not getting anything that makes your team better, that's a little bit harder.
Yeah. And this isn't a team, I think, where maybe like Charlotte, maybe like even Orlando, a team where it's like, all right, hey, we haven't been good in a while. We just don't really have that much young talent. They have 2 guys on this team and then another really, really good starter. But those 2 guys have, sky's the limit for their upside. You would think at least internally, that's what you're thinking. So yeah, the idea that, hey, we got to just surround these guys with like kind of mediocre talent just so we can like get back to the playoffs. I mean, I guess they have the new arena, but it's, oh man, I don't know. I actually just kind of got started here. I didn't really think about this that hard in the aggregate until we just started talking about it, but I'm really kind of disappointed because I thought this team, now you're really cutting off your upside. Whereas like, hey, if Giannis and Jabari have unbelievable years, now maybe at the very least you could say, all right, we've got max space. We can overpay for a guy who's like a solid starter, in free agency next year and really add to this core as opposed to, you know, we've got some guys who are okay and like at least our bench won't be terrible and maybe we can make the playoffs now. But I really just don't see, you know, an above 50 win future for this core unless like Giannis and Jabari just become like unbelievable. And even then I think you're kind of being held back by guys like Plumlee, Delly, who are really just frankly below average starting level players.
And if they had bet big this year instead of next year on the right guy, like I said, Biombo, you know, if they had done it on him or maybe even Jan Mahimi, just Mahimi wouldn't have been as good a fit, but Biombo would have been interesting to try to at least really solve one of their problems. They didn't really solve either one. They got possibilities, but they didn't resolve that. And I like the Teletovic contract, but it's not, I mean, if you think about the concept of this team, unless you're going to play Giannis at center, he's probably going to be a backup. And, you know, paying a backup $10 million isn't going to be that big of a deal anymore. But it limits your ability to aim high.
So the Bucks did not aim high this summer, but SeatGeek definitely aims high to give you the best options in buying or selling tickets. SeatGeek aggregates together all of the ticket buying options. So now you don't have to worry that, oh, I went to 8 sites and I didn't really find a great option, so now I'm going to look at the 9th. No, now you just look at SeatGeek once. It's all together in front of your fingertips. They rate each deal based on whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. So you can instantly decide whether you want to buy tickets or not and not worry that you're just not getting the best deal. SeatGeek provides you with so much technology to help you make that decision and you're not going to have regrets afterwards. SeatGeek also is a great market for selling tickets as well. That same deal score metric that they have enables you to take a quick look and get a fair price for your tickets and not have to worry that you're spending a bunch of time trying to price your tickets in a way that's not going to sell them fast enough or sell them for too little. So as the inaugural sponsor of the Dunked On podcast, they're a great fit for us. They take an analytical approach to buying and selling tickets. We, of course, take an analytical approach on the podcast, and it wouldn't be a Dunked On ad if we didn't have a discount for our listeners. Go into the settings tab of the free SeatGeek app, click on add a promo code and enter in that promo code CAPSPACE. Very familiar. We talk about it all the time on the program. Just talked about it with Milwaukee, and that lets them know that you came from us. And after you make your first purchase, they'll send you $20. So download that free SeatGeek app, go into the settings tab, click on add a promo code, enter that CAPSPACE code and save. So Dallas, 2 years, $50 million for Dirk, and they really could do whatever they wanted to with that because they made that small move with Jeremy Evans to move him to Indiana, and that allowed them to keep Dirk's cap hold on the books. They, of course, have full bird rights on him since he's been there forever. So they could pay him anything they wanted to up to his max, which would have been $31 million. And they instead went with this 2 years, $50 million. The second year is only $5 million guaranteed. Basically, kind of if he wants to retire, they can give him another little bit of a balloon payment. But if we assume that he plays again next year and it's, you know, if he wants to play, he's going to get that. It's hard to imagine him walking away from $20 million, no matter where he's at health wise at that point. And they're not going to cut him unless he suffers some like career ending injury. They'll never do that. So you can basically assume that that's going to be on the books next year. Where are they at in terms of cash?
If he stays, they don't really have much flexibility. That's a lot of it into it. And then you also have to account for, you know, Deron Williams could be coming back. You know, they're a team that I would say most likely would function as an over the cap in that situation. And if he retires and they stretch him, they can get to about $35 million.
Yeah. And again, it's really hard for me to imagine. He's also has been pretty effective still. And hopefully he won't have to play as many minutes this year. Barnes is much healthier than Chandler Parsons has been. So he can take a lot of his minutes at backup four. They've got Wes Matthews, they've got Justin Anderson. They actually really have a lot more kind of on the wing. I mean, that's one good thing about this Dallas team now is they have three pretty darn good options on the wing with Anderson, Matthews, and Barnes. And they've got a few guys they can kind of run through at point guard as well and hope to just find something what's working on a given night. So I still got to wrap my head around where they are. It's definitely interesting to see them basically punt on any flexibility for next year. But once they kind of decided that they're going to take care of Dirk, that was, I guess the only downside here really is why wouldn't they just make this 1 year? And then if they have a chance to be flexible, he could sign again for a discount for the last year of his career. Maybe he just decided he didn't want to go through that stress anymore and he just kind of wanted this balloon payment. But they always could have just done the same thing next year, see if they could have gotten someone who really would have helped. And if not, you know, signed him to the same contract again.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done a possibility like that. But, you know, I can understand why there has been a lot of, let's call it sentimentality over rationality with Dallas. And I'm not necessarily criticizing that because when you have a player like this, I'm sure Dwayne Wade is sitting there kind of wishing that they had done a little bit of that in his case. And Dallas.
Yeah. Well, the difference is he took less too. You know, this isn't like the Kobe thing. I mean, people are analogizing it to that, but Dirk took way less for quite a bit of time here to enable them to build around him, and they just weren't able to do it. So I think now it's kind of like, all right, just pay me at this point.
And $50 million now is substantially different than $50 million a couple of years ago. Like that's, you know, I haven't done a conversion on it, but it's a massive difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. So again, another team though, that 2017 free agent market, which we thought would be just as overheated as 2016, and you know, maybe something weird will happen where the cap will go up a lot more as a result of the labor negotiations. I don't necessarily see that happening though. So if the cap does come in around 102 or so, that means that this is another team now that's kind of punted on space. Milwaukee kind of has two. Toronto is going to be over the cap. Like all these teams, I mean, we're really going to be kind of down to more. It looks like, you know, maybe 20 teams, 15 teams that are going to have a ton of space in 2017. And again, as we noted, pretty good free agent class. So it looks like 2016 is really going to be even more of an outlier than we thought in terms of kind of some of the bad contracts that are being handed out. That's at least how it appears at this time. Maybe that'll change, but that's my projection at this moment, at least.
And one team that has not participated in the overheated 2016 free agency, of course, they're sad about that, is the Oklahoma City Thunder. And even in a more prominent way, they withdrew the qualifying offer for Dion Waiters, which I found absolutely fascinating because I have no idea what the benefit is to them when you consider him taking the qualifying offer as a totally fine outcome for them.
Well, I think the concern was a couple of things. One is if you trade Westbrook, you might, and you're really going to go into a rebuilding mode, you can probably get more assets if you also take on some bad salary from another team. Waiters also, if he signed that qualifying offer, would be untradeable. That would be a problem. And that $7.6 million kind of eats into potential space that they could use either to renegotiate and extend Russell Westbrook or to make offers to other potential free agents. It was getting to the point. I mean, that's a pretty substantial qualifying offer. It's $7.6 million, I believe. And so it was getting to the point where if you got to July 23rd, they would not be able to withdraw it any longer. That's the last day you can do it without the player's consent. And there would have been no reason for him to agree to that. And then also you're kind of potentially stuck with them. So I think that it makes sense to me because they just kind of didn't want to pay him that. They got Alex Abrines, so they don't really need him anymore this year. So, and they still have his cap hold on the books. They can pay him whatever they want to still. Like that'll stick around until they actually use that space. But it's pretty, seeing the fact that no team has moved on Waiters since they withdrew the qualifying offer makes me think that the risk of him actually taking it kind of looked like it might be higher. And that's why they withdrew. I think that actually makes sense.
I fundamentally disagree with you, but I think it's based on a different calculation in terms of the use of their cap space, because I agree with you that if they were going to renegotiate and extend Russell Westbrook, that would be useful. I don't think that's going to happen. For a lot of reasons, I don't expect that. I don't expect him to commit to that while he doesn't really know what their team is going to look like. And I don't see many real uses of their cap space at this point. And they could have fit Abrines into the, because they could actually function as an over the cap team. They could have fit him into, at this point, into the mid-level exception. You know, they could have done it that way or room, whatever they wanted to do with that. So you have that as an assumption. And yes, you are right that they could not trade Dion Waiters. However, there's a very important caveat on that, and that is without his consent. And
yeah, but you don't want to put yourself in that position though.
Yeah, but I mean, realistically, so if he's unhappy, then you can trade him to the Nets for nothing. And, you know, then you get a trade exception out of it, which is pretty sweet. And I don't see that as being such a prohibitive downside to do it. And yeah, I mean, it is a little bit cold and calculating, but I think when we look at what this Oklahoma City Thunder team is going to be, I don't think they're going to be any better off. I don't expect Allen Anderson to just fall over himself to go there. And there aren't that many guys left. You know, there isn't really that thing to do with that space right now. And
yeah, Harkless would be probably the only guy, I would think.
They're not going to do that. I just see it as I understand where you're coming from and where they were coming from. I just think that it was, again, and while you don't want to beat this dead horse, another amazingly bad use of an asset for the Oklahoma City Thunder in the long-term scope of everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're not going to get any argument from that here that basically they got a year and a third out of Dion, or I guess a year and a half out of Dion Waiters. And that's what they got for their first round pick. And now he's basically just going to be gone. And the other thing I'll say on this though is having him on a 1 year, $7.5 million contract just does them no good at this point. Like they have plenty of other options at shooting guard who frankly will probably be better than him. You know, now that they have Oladipo, they have Abrines, like, and when you think about it, they're obviously not willing to offer him a long-term contract. So having the qualifying offer doesn't help. Like the whole point of the qualifying offer is, hey, now we can either match somebody else's long-term offer that's got to be at least 2 years, or we force you to agree to a below market deal because we know that the market for you is chilled. They don't even want him, I don't think, past this year. I don't think they're making him any kind of an offer for a long-term deal that he would remotely accept. So it just doesn't, having him on the team for 1 year, 3 years, 4 years, it just didn't make sense anymore. I think that's why they decided to move on from him, especially because you consider some of the stories you hear about him as a teammate and the fact that he's probably going to be, if not out of the rotation, close to it. Now he's going to be poisoning the well there also. And I think it's just better to kind of let him go, in my opinion. Portland, though, we talked about them a little bit with Harkless. The reporting from CSN Northwest is that they are still in stalemate with Harkless. I could see this one going a long way. I do think that a team like Brooklyn Phoenix doesn't really have much use for him. Brooklyn is probably the only one really that would look at him, but maybe they just don't want to lock in long-term, or they're just not really believers in him to the extent. And I understand that because he shot 28% on threes last year. I think it's possible that his playoff performance and the fact that he was just on a good playoff team might mean that we're overrating him a little bit. But he's also really young still. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think ends up happening with him?
It's hard to see a team that's going to play ball with an offer at this point, but a team should, not only because, his market is chilled, but because it is less likely now that Portland will match it just because of all the money they spent. We talked last time about how they're potentially majestic luxury tax bill. Like, this is a team that's going to be spending a lot. So the other franchise that is bothering me is Minnesota. Like, if Minnesota just threw a deal that they were happy with, then, maybe Portland matches it, maybe they don't. But what else are they going to do with their space?
Yeah, well, to me, Minnesota did a good job of not doing what we're criticizing the Bucks for. And I think that making a big offer to Harkless at this point and tying up your space in 2017 would be a mistake right now, especially because I don't think that he necessarily moves the needle for them as a franchise. And they could look really good this year with Tibbs, and they could potentially aim higher. I think when you're so far away from what you predict your eventual zenith to be as a franchise, kind of locking yourself into mediocre talents. And while I like Harkless, I still think, he's at best a league average combo forward, even at his height. So I think just keeping the powder dry and seeing what you can get. And then, as those guys get into your prime, you say, all right, we got to really fire both barrels now just to get as good as we can. But they're so far away from that point. I think Milwaukee is too, but they didn't kind of act like it. Couple other small notes here. In Orlando, Jody Meeks out indefinitely after another surgery on his foot. I think he had the same injury as KD, that Jones fracture, and I think it could be similar situation with him. He tried to come back and play right at the end of the year. Didn't really go too well for him, and I think maybe he's just having that bone graft, but he is out indefinitely is the most that we've heard. And then Mike Miller has returned on a 2-year, $5 million a year deal to Denver. I'm sorry, 2-year, $5 million overall to Denver. Part of that might be non-guaranteed in the second year. That wouldn't surprise me, but they got plenty of cap space. They're not even near the floor yet, and he's a good locker room guy. So I think that's the reason that they are bringing him back. And finally, in New Orleans, Alonzo G returns for 1 year, maybe slightly above the minimum, which is about what he's making last year. So he opted out, and then he's coming back to the exact same place, making almost exactly the same amount of money.
And also, they signed their second-round pick, Shake Diallo, for 3 years. It sounds like it's all guaranteed at the minimum. So that's actually a really nice thing for them. And they were the team that waited a really long time to sign all their guys. And the reason for that is that once you sign, once you use your space, you can't do any flexibility. And so waiting allowed them to give Diallo a 3-year deal because that required cap space because you can't use the minimum exception.
Yeah, and that's what the Warriors did not do with Pat McCaw, which may end up coming back to bite them in a couple of years if he's as good as he's kind of looked so far. All right, let's do some summer league here. We're just going to kind of go in alphabetical order, talk about some of the guys that we thought were noteworthy. We'll start with the Hawks. I think that their idea in the draft was, I liked it in the sense that clearly there just are not enough good wings in the league, and it's such an advantage to have them, just guys who are rotation level wings, starting level wings. And so they felt like with Torian Prince and DeAndre Bembry, they were looking for guys like that. How much of Prince did you see? What'd you think?
I didn't get to see much of Prince because due to the snafu with the trade with Indiana, I think that was the reason he only played in 3 summer league games.
Oh yeah.
So I didn't get to see much of him, but physically he looks ready. Like he's a big dude, he's impressive in that way. but I've never been a big fan of just his overall. I mean, I guess so. He's some people think of him as, oh, like a 3-and-D guy or something like that, but I don't love the D part of it for him. And I know some people do.
What do you not like about it?
I think that, well, first of all, he played at Baylor, so it's really hard to evaluate a lot of that kind of stuff, but I thought he got
zone there.
Exactly. And that there were times when he would get blown by even, I mean, it's in his zone, so it's hard to calibrate with that. And like, he didn't have the lateral movement that you would expect from a guy like him. And I don't think he used his body as well as you'd hope. It's something that could be corrected with time. I don't think it's like, oh, this guy's deficient in a way that can't be resolved, but I didn't love it.
Yeah. I thought offensively, he looked a little bit better than he might have expected. He took some threes off the dribble in pick and rolls. He was asked to handle the ball quite a bit. He's not quite ready to do that. You know, he had a lot of really bad turnovers working in pick and roll. His left hand, he suffered a lot of kind of mishandles when he was trying to operate with his left hand off the dribble, had some really bad passes where, you know, he'd be on a pick and roll. One shooter would be open. The other one would be covered. He'd throw it to the cover guy and turn it over, those sorts of plays. But I do, you know, that's what summer league is for, is to challenge guys to expand their game. And then he had some decent moments defensively. I think just from a physical standpoint, I think he's solid, but he did have some inattentiveness off the ball. He wasn't incredibly quick kind of closing out to shooters as well. He'd either get blown by on those plays or just not get there in time and they'd get a three off. So I'm not quite sure to say that he's going to be ready defensively, at least in year one, but I mean, I don't think in general, my opinion of him changed that much. I mean, that's kind of what we'll be talking about is, you know, how did it compare to what your pre-draft expectations were? And I thought he was solid, showed a little bit more in terms of ball skills and shooting off the dribble than I expected. But, you know, nothing really other than that to say about it.
So next guy was their other first round pick. They took DeAndre Bembry, and I liked Bembry because he does something that most wings don't, which is that I feel like he has a kind of a calmness when he has the ball in his hands and he makes good decisions. And as much as there are other things, he will need to do more than that to be a playable NBA guy, but that is a real nice start.
Yeah, he looked good handling the ball. He found the roll man extremely well, had some nice, more advanced passes to shooters as well, but really great looks to Eddie Tavares on a number of plays rolling to the rim. A couple of problems for him, though. One is that he can't really jump. Like, he is not, I would rate him as having below average explosion at the rim for an NBA wing, either off of 1 or 2 feet. And I didn't get a chance to watch a ton of his defense live, but just he's not the type of athlete you would expect from an elite defender. He definitely tries hard. He has good basketball IQ. And also, I think his shooting will need to get a lot better as well. Again, that's the type of guys that the Hawks have had success with, but he doesn't, I don't think, have the athleticism of even like a Kent Bazemore or a Damari Carroll, the two most notable successes. So I do think that his ball skills are useful.
One thing I'll note, though, is that it was so surprising. He actually had a really nice dunk on somebody. I wish I remembered who it was. And it was one of the more shocking ones I could remember because I just didn't think he had it in him at all. Like, it was just one of those things like, huh? But it was only once. So, you know, that, you know, maybe he has it in a little burst, but it was just that one time stuck out like a sore thumb for that exact reason.
Yeah. I didn't see that particular one. I mean, I usually have been kind of going through and watching about half of these guys' shots to get an idea of how they looked. And on some of his other finishes at the rim, he really was not able to explode. And maybe he just had a real good head of steam that time or something. So both those guys too, Prince and Bembry, are both 22. So that's a little bit more of a curve that you're grading on for guys who are younger than some of these older guys who are closer to what they're eventually going to be. Another guy, Eddie Tavares, if you're not familiar with him, he's from Gran Canaria, 7'3", huge guy. Kind of one of these, I mean, he's sort of like a Boban light type of guy where, you know, he doesn't have that level of strength or intensity, but he did at least get on the offensive glass. He blocked some shots. It's kind of all you can expect from him. They didn't post him up at all. I don't think he's really very successful at that. His jumper is not something that really you expect him to be a weapon with at this point. I mean, what do you think of him just overall? Does he have a chance to become a rotation player? Is he more of a curio, as our boy KP would say?
I think he's more of a third center, fifth big type of guy where you can have him on your active roster and play him in case of, you know, injury or foul trouble, but you don't want him to be more than that just because I don't see it defensively. I don't see
he's too slow.
Yeah. I think that, you know, if you need to get 5 minutes out of him because you're starting to, you know, let's say Dwight Howard, you know, gets 2 quick fouls. And so you have to play whoever your backup is at that moment. a couple more minutes and you can slide him in. I have no problem with that at all. But again, like one of the things I like to think about when you slot a guy into a position is, can he step into the role above it? And I'm not completely comfortable with that. So, you know, at the money they're paying him, that's not a problem. But I like to think about it in terms of also in terms of what, whether you would like that would prevent you from getting anybody else. And he's definitely not at that level for me. Like if another interesting center is around, I'm not going to say, oh, well, we have Eddie, so we're not going to get some.
Yeah, I agree with you in large part there. I do think that he has decent hands for a player of his ilk. He can dunk it when he gets some space. Not really a ton of touch if he has a body on him. You know, he hit through a few just like really bad kind of caroms just off the backboard, like trying to go up for a layup when he get bumped off his shot. And he's also one of these guys who's like so big that he almost like can't even run down court at full speed. So with all of that, yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to ever count on him really being a rotation guy. One other note on the Hawks, Isaiah Cordonnier is going to play in France next year. He was drafted in the 40s. I forget exactly where in the second round. He did not have a good summer league. He was 5 out of 20 from the field in 5 games. So he couldn't get his shot, didn't play that many minutes, and couldn't make the shots that he got. So he definitely has a long way to go, to be sure.
Yeah, talented athlete, but needs to get significantly better in order to be an NBA rotation player.
So the Celtics, I mean, we're never going to get through this if every team had as many prospects as the Celtics. Let's start with Jaylen Brown. What were your thoughts on him, especially compared to your understanding of where he was at after in the pre-draft process?
So it was funny because he was shaky when I was at Summer League, like when I was going to games, and he got better when you were there, which I thought was funny considering that's kind of how we felt about him at the time. But then when I went back and watched some of that, he's a really fascinating talent because the shooting is still an issue, and I you can go back and listen to my concerns about that, but his handle is legitimate and he's active defensively. And so I think he can carve out a role. I still don't really see star or superstar in him, but there's a lot to like.
Yeah, he shot the NBA through his confidence. He looked good shooting it. I think on spot ups, he should be able to get to be okay relatively soon. But he also was only 5 out of 22 on threes overall through Utah and Las Vegas, and he did only shoot 32%. He was really reliant on getting to the foul line. He took 61 free throw attempts in 6 games, including 17 in his first game that I was at in Utah. So I am a little bit wary of summer league guys who get to the foul line a lot because it is sort of more of a high foul environment, both with inexperienced big men and then refs who are trying to do a good job. Cause it's, you know, it's summer league for them too. For a lot of these D league guys, they're basically trying to call everything. He did get into the paint whenever he wanted to, though. I thought that his ball handling, his power was really impressive. I also was encouraged that he didn't turn it over very much because that was a major, major problem at Cal. And I excuse that due to the lack of spacing, but you never know if that's the case. So the fact that he didn't turn it over was good. And he just had some moments off the dribble where he just spun past guys so fast, just fake guys out like crazy. Had some pretty good finishes. He's not quite a nuclear dunker, but you know, he's definitely well above average for an NBA player, and he's got that big, strong body as well at 220 pounds. His defense has some potential. He gets out of his stance really easily. He kind of goes for hesitations and fakes where he'll kind of pop up and then can get blown by. And he also only had 8 assists in 6 games, which considering what the level of usage that he had was not particularly encouraging. I think also when he started playing better, that was after Terry Rozier had kind of stopped playing, and Terry was maybe the best player of anybody who played a lot of games in the summer league.
And Terry Rozier, it makes complete sense that he was good in summer league because he's a little bit older. He's 22, and he's a guy who can, against these kind of athletes, he can get to the rim. And as you just talked about foul trouble, like that, you can use that to your advantage a lot better against this kind of competition than you can in the NBA. And what was surprising to me is that he didn't take a ton of them, but he made a lot of the threes that he took.
Yeah, he looked good taking threes. I mean, it was only 7 out of 16. That's a very small sample, but he looked comfortable taking them off the dribble, spot ups. Either way, he was excellent in transition. He's also just a wonderful defensive rebounder for a point guard, and that can really juice his transition opportunities. Again, another guy who doesn't turn it over that much, at least during this summer league. So that was useful. He's someone who's been a high turnover guy in the past. The only thing that you would hope for more from with him is his vision. There'll be a lot of times where, you know, he can just, even if it's a simple, just making the extra pass to a guy one pass away wide open for a three, you'll see him miss that pass. So that's something that he struggles with, but he did everything that you could have hoped for from him here, and he finished with a 33 PER and a 67 true shooting percentage, and I think six games between Utah and Las Vegas, really just an outstanding run for him.
It's hard with him because he's definitely a talented guy, but if you are point guard sized, even with his other gifts, but you can't really run an offense, it's hard to really carve out a role, but he certainly could. It's just a lot harder to do.
Yeah, James Young, a lot less impressive. He's still pretty young. He only turns 21 in August, and his shot looked great from three. He was basically like wasn't even hitting the rim on some of these, just straight through the net. He was 9 out of 17 on threes, but not a ton of threes in five games really for him. He was 5 out of 22 on Tuesday. He only had 5 assists in 5 games, and his defense, his athleticism, he was not making up for it in the other categories, we'll say. So I think he, other than the fact that he can make a shot, which for his age is not bad, but he's not really good at getting his shot, and he's got to just add more of the categories. I mean, I think he can be, he's a good enough shooter right now where if he can get to be passable on defense, maybe he can get into being in the rotation, but he just is, seems very far away from an intensity standpoint, from an athleticism standpoint. And we'll see what happens with him, but I definitely feel like if they had needed to, they would have just moved on from him to open up more space if there was anyone that they really wanted to sign, but there just isn't anyone out there at this
point. Yeah, considering his rookie scale contract, I think he deserves keeping a place in the league, but I'm not necessarily sure that has to be with the Celtics. You know, like somebody, if theoretically he were on the market, somebody should absolutely pick him up, either with, you know, claiming him off waivers or in a trade. But, you know, that's kind of a different thing.
Yeah, if I were the Celtics, I might try to just move him for a second rounder or something this year, because they're probably contemplating declining his rookie option. And since he's that young and he does have a skill, I wouldn't recommend that. But they are going to be a team that's going to try and use some 2017 space. Gershon Yabusele, the 16th pick, he's actually going to be playing in Shanghai this year. He's 20 years old. I was not particularly impressed by him. Doesn't seem to have a ton of upside just because he's kind of one of these wide body guys. He can get up better than you'd expect for that body type. He had a couple of tip dunks that were actually like pretty impressive, but just in the course of his general playing, he doesn't really get off the ground all that much. And, you know, he was advertised as a shooter. He missed a lot of jump shots that, and a lot of them that weren't particularly close. And he does have really quick feet. I mean, I think of him as sort of like maybe a slightly better jumping Glenn Davis, although he's going to have to get to kind of that level of intensity defensively. So I'm just not really sure, just because of the type of player that he is, like what his upside is really, is, you know, to be a starting level player in the NBA.
I see him as more of a fun novelty that could be successful in a smaller league, you know, that maybe China will be a really nice fit for that. But defensively, he's a man without a position at the NBA level, just because he can't protect the rim. And I don't think he can stick with fours well enough to do it, to do it. And maybe, yeah, as a rotation.
His feet are quicker than you would expect. I'll give him that, especially in pick and roll defense. But you're right. I mean, I don't know that he does the four stuff well enough to where it's like he can really take advantage of the fact that he's a four if you're going with someone a little bit smaller against him. But he does have that big body, and maybe, you know, he can develop that toughness a little bit more.
Do I have to be negative about RJ Hunter?
You can just follow what your eyes see, Danny.
I mean, he certainly has an ability to shoot, but why I was higher on him, and this is a sad parallel to Nick Stauskas, is that I thought he could do a lot more than that. I liked his handle. I thought he had decent vision, and he has had those flashes even last year and a little bit in summer league, but that and still not being there defensively makes it a lot harder for him to even be a reliable transition player, much less a starter like I had hoped when he was drafted.
This is another guy. He was 11 out of 24 on threes and 4 of 18 on twos, and he only had 6 assists in 5 games. Granted, the summer league is probably a lower assist environment than a normal NBA. I haven't actually checked that, but just the lack of chemistry, you think that would probably be the case. He's gotten a little bit stronger, but he still is pretty weak. And you just ask people who, you know, around the D league who saw him a fair amount with the main Red Claws, and they just said, hey, you know, he's not someone that we're worried about. He's got to get tougher. He's a guy that they feel like they can take advantage of defensively. He also can't shoot going to his right, just because of kind of the weird way that he brings the ball up in front of his body and kind of a little bit on the left side of his body. So it's difficult for him to go to his right and shoot. And he's 23 in October, so he's got to really get to the point where he's making some contributions. And other than shooting three-pointers, I don't really see what he does as a player. And that's probably, you know, he could still improve. He's got a couple of years still to where, you know, maybe he can get stronger. Maybe he can get to be average defensively and be a rotation guy. It's hard for me to see him ever being a starter, but if you can shoot the ball like him and not be terrible defensively, there's probably a place for you in the league, but I don't really see that there is a ton of upside for him, unfortunately.
A guy who has more upside than he showed at Summer League is Jordan Mickey. I've liked Jordan Mickey for a while. And what struck me, and part of that is because the Celtics team was so loaded, is that there were stretches of time where I didn't even really realize, oh, that's Jordan Mickey, like a guy who I really like. You just be like, oh, there's a dude at center. And that's not a good thing at Summer League because there aren't that many really good centers and a lot of the good ones do stand out. So, you know, some of that is that he was coming back from a shoulder thing and he didn't look all the way like himself. But, you know, you always want to see more from somebody you like.
Yeah, you would hope maybe that he could provide some athleticism and shot blocking and energy and maybe even be on the fringes of the rotation this year for the Celtics. And I've seen him a lot in the D-League last year. He looked much more athletic. I think that shoulder injury kind of sapped his aggressiveness. He also just looked heavy, which isn't necessarily an indictment because a lot of times, I mean, this actually happened with Chandler Parsons a couple of years ago when he was trying out for Team USA. A lot of guys, you can't like gain weight and get stronger and necessarily stay super cut. Like you have to sort of get stronger and then you cut some weight a little bit as you're getting ready to the season. I think he might have been, you know, in the earlier stages of that process, but he definitely looked heavier than I recalled him seeing him. So, and he just didn't really have much explosion. Like he wasn't protecting the rim, getting up the way you expect to see from him. So I think this was an aberration from him, but definitely was not a good summer. Like he just didn't really do anything at all on either end, especially didn't block any shots, which you would hope to see from him. That's kind of his big skill, to be able to protect the rim at his size and with his mobility.
The last two guys, both late second round picks for the Celtics, Demetrius Jackson, point guard out of Notre Dame, and Abdul Nader of the, he was a forward out of Iowa State, which I was still surprised the Bulls didn't take. I thought they both, I thought they both looked fine. Nader to me seemed like more of a, you know, an outside possibility of an NBA guy. Demetrius was a little bit closer, but I didn't like him as much as I hoped I would.
Yeah, Jackson is athletic. You could kind of think of him as like mini Terry Rozier, out of Notre Dame. And then, Nader, unsafe at any speed. Can that be his nickname?
That's a long nickname for a guy who's probably not going to stick in the league.
Yeah, he played about as well as you could have hoped for a guy who was drafted at the end of the second round. I thought he was, looked good off the dribble, not incredibly explosive, but he's got some good craft, shot the ball well from three. And think of him as like kind of a, you know, poor man's Jared Dudley was the comparison that came to mind. You know, not an explosive athlete, but has some craft, probably not even as big as Jared, actually. You know, he's probably more 6'5", 6'6". But, you know, I got to keep an eye on a little bit. Maybe he'll play in Maine this year. They can't possibly get all these guys onto the team because they had like 8 second rounders or whatever it was. But I thought he looked like he at least showed as much as you could have possibly hoped for a guy who was drafted that late in the second round. Let's get to Brooklyn and one of your favorites, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yep. The lesson for Rondae here is stay in your lane. You know, like they tried to have him do more than he did in Brooklyn last year. He didn't do well with that stuff, but he still played good defense.
Yeah, they tried to put the ball in his hands in pick and roll. And I mean, it's not like he was doing the wrong thing. You know, I think he certainly was just asked to do that, being asked to expand his game. And a lot of times on these, it's not fair to just say, oh, this guy played badly, his percentages were bad. You know, he's trying to improve. That's what the point of this is for guys who are already established rotation players like Rondae is. His spot up three still looks terrible. I mean, he just like, I don't even know what to say about what's wrong with it, but he has this like crazy exaggerated follow through and like he just like, that's the only way he can get it to the rim. He somehow like shoots a set shot on the way down is what it looks like. He did show a little bit with his right hand at the rim, which has been a big problem for him. Still very left hand dominant, but at least tried to finish a couple of times with the right. And I thought he showed some nice moves off the dribble. I mean, he's got like a little bit of shiftiness to him, but, you know, if he is actually going to run some pick and rolls in the NBA, they'll just go under on him every time and he'll be powerless to deal with that. But, you know, if he at least gets a head of steam off a dribble handoff or, you know, the ball gets swung to him and he can attack right away, he at least showed some flashes and being able to do something with it. So it didn't really change my opinion of him too much either way. I thought he looked okay with the ball in his hands, which we hadn't seen from him before. But like you said, I don't think it's something that we're going to want to see from him at this point yet in the NBA. But, you know, he's only a second year player and he's got some work to do on that. What do you think of Chris McCullough?
Eh, I mean, he's not, certainly not terrible, and he's only 21, so he's not one of those guys where it's like, oh, you know, he's not showing anything and he's older. I struggle to see how he's gonna, you know, be good enough to make an opponent pay. Like, he's not a great enough shooter that you're sitting there like, oh, we gotta make sure we close out on him. He's not a great enough athlete where he's just like a force in transition, but he's not bad at any of those things. He's just not amazing.
Yeah, I would say the appeal is that he is smooth for his size, you know, 6'9", 6'10". His shot does look nice. You know, he's not hitting it at a ridiculous rate yet, but it looks like he could get there. He kind of reminds me of like Perry Jones III, actually. It was my comparison for him. He's not as bouncy as you'd like for a guy who's that thin and is going to have to try to hold up at the power forward position. I think his lack of strength limited him a lot. And remember, he's coming off that ACL tear, basically played a little bit at the end of the year, but not very much. And he also had a couple of times in transition where just his straight line speed was very impressive, but he's not as bouncy as you might like for him. And maybe that's something that'll improve because he had that reputation coming out of Syracuse before the ACL injury. So maybe, but not a guy where I felt like, okay, this guy should be in the rotation this year, just watching him in summer league.
Are you ready to move on to your Las Vegas summer league champions, the Chicago Bulls?
Well, first let's talk about the world's first home body scanner, the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker. These guys, actually, I found out about them because one of my buddies who's a doctor shared it with me on Facebook, and I instantly thought it was a great product. Basically, it allows you to track your fitness journey in 3D. You step on a scale, it spins around in front of a mirror that has scanners in it, and you get basically a 3D image of your body sent to your phone. And it can tell you what your body fat is. It can tell you the diameter of all of your limbs or various spots in your torso, so you can kind of track how well your fitness regimen is doing. And they also have this thing called a heat map that'll show you where you've gained muscle or lost fat. So even in the early days of a fitness regimen, you might not see it on the scale. You might not see it in the mirror because our eyes kind of trick us on that. You see yourself every day. It's hard to notice the difference sometimes. But this will show you exactly where you're making progress. If you have any imbalances, you know, for working out between your left and right side, really just a fantastic product. It's going to be $1,000 when it goes on sale in the spring. I've tried out the prototype. If you order it now, it's only $699, and you can get $50 off by going to naked.fit/capspace. Capspace, easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. That lets them know that you came from us. naked.fit/capspace is the URL for that Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. So yeah, Chicago won the Summer League Championship 7-0. They had a lot more roster guys on there. You don't think of them as having a ton of prospects, but they actually had some guys who played really well.
They did. And I mean, you could start it with, also some of their guys are a little bit older, so that might be part of the reason you don't think of it. They just haven't played in the league that long. Cristiano Felicio, center, kind of just a physical, just beast of a guy. And I like him as a rotation guy, and I think he could be a contributor for them this year.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they are kind of counting on him to play backup center. We might see Taj Gibson play a little bit in that role as well. But Felicio has center size. He's come so far since I saw him at the 2014 Eurocamp, when he didn't even make Draft Express's write-up as their preview before the camp. And he's improved his body immensely. He can really get up off of 1 foot for some dunks now. He's got great finishing touch with either power or touch, except with his left is still kind of coming along. He missed a couple of chippies with his left, but he's willing to use it, which is good. He also shot just a really good percentage around the rim. He has a great knack for finding seams to get passes in the defense and in what could be a spacing challenge team with Wade and Rondo, but guys who can pass it really well. That could be a very useful skill. He has a jump shot, which we didn't see a ton of in Vegas. He was mostly just playing in the center of the court. And he also had 12 assists in their 7 games, which is a lot for a center. Had some nice passes to guys on back doors. So just a guy who's really improved his skill level, his athleticism. He rebounds the ball pretty well on the defensive end. And not an amazing defender yet, but someone who at least can make a little bit of an impact there. So he had a great end of the season, even finished some games over Pau Gasol, and I'm excited to see what he can do next year. He played about as well as you could have hoped for from a player of his ilk.
Somebody else who played well, Bobby Portis, Portis, I thought, deserved the MVP of the championship game, though giving an MVP of the championship game and a summer league is a weird thing in and of itself. He takes a lot of shots.
Hey, it's the summer. We need anything that we can talk about here on podcast.
That's true. And I don't know about you, but Portis, for whatever reason, maybe it's because I'd heard about him for a little while before, he's only 21. I had thought that he was a little bit older than that. He's 21 and he's February, so it's not like he's turning 22 really soon. And, you know, if he makes the shots like he did last year in Summer League, and to a point this year, depending on the game, he can be a contributor. But I talked about with Yabusele that he's kind of a man without a country defensively, and I'm growing more concerned that if you were thinking of him as a starter, that Portis might be in that land as well.
Yeah, he jacks up shots, but they definitely went in for him in Summer League, and he took more threes than he did during the regular season. I mean, he can't just keep taking as many long twos every time he catches the ball with a spot of daylight, but if he can make those threes and make them, then he becomes pretty valuable offensively. But as you noted, defense is a big problem. And that's what I really caution Bulls fans who are like, oh, Bobby Portis has got to play more. We're so excited about him at the beginning of last year. It's like, yeah, he can't stop anybody. And he doesn't move laterally particularly well. Not a huge intelligence level. And he also can't jump, which is a major problem for him. So he doesn't protect the rim at all. Decent rebounder, probably better on the offensive end with his intensity than on the defensive end. I think maybe his upside is as kind of a Patrick Patterson type, but he's probably, and I wouldn't think of Patterson as particularly athletic, but he's less athletic than Patterson is, other than just his ability to run the floor. So he's not a guy you can switch guard on the perimeter at this point in his career. And that's what's really going to make the difference for him, is his ability to slide his feet in pick and roll defense, switch when needed, protect the rim on occasion, defensive rebound, because otherwise he just turns into one of those guys who's a four and shoots threes, but then you just put a wing on him and he's totally neutralized. So making strides in the big man areas, I think what he's able to do offensively with his shooting and running the floor really could make him a valuable player, but he's got to stay on the floor in the other areas. And while he had a nice summer league, I don't think he's particularly close there yet.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair interpretation. And their rookie, their lottery pick, Denzel Valentine, he looked good in moments. I talked about how with Bembry, I liked his calmness. And I think that kind of composure was also something with Valentine. I thought when he passed, he did a nice job. I thought he took too many shots and didn't make nearly enough of them. And it's also concerning that he turns 23 in November.
Yeah, I thought his ability to pull up for three off the pick and roll, if he can make that shot, is something that can help him. He is an excellent passer, but it's really going to be difficult for him to be an efficient player unless he's really spotting up a lot, because he just doesn't get fouled at all. He doesn't have the explosion to get all the way to the rim and finish, to get big guys out of positions. Even in this setting, he wasn't able to get to the foul line. It's a lot of push shots in the mid-range for him, just not efficient shots, not shots that you want him to be taking on a team that has some primary offensive options around him. And then his defense isn't going to be a strength one-on-one, although I think he is a smart team defender. So it's going to be tough, I think, to find him minutes with his defense this year. And, you know, if they didn't have Rondo on the team, then maybe you could say, all right, we'll play him a little bit as kind of a de facto point guard or something like that. But it's another guy really who I don't think does anything so incredibly well. I mean, you think of him almost as like an Evan Turner who shoots threes, who could be a valuable player. But I also don't think that Valentine is going to get to the point that Turner has defensively, because he's probably even less athletic than Turner.
And there's an intense value to a guy who has greater than point guard size, who can handle the ball. I think that especially on second units, because that allows you to play some of these more limited guys who can only defend ones who otherwise wouldn't have a spot in the league, but are talented. But you kind of hope for more than that from a lottery pick, and especially because he's not there yet. You know, he's not at the point yet where he can be, oh, he's your primary ball handler on the second unit. He's not there yet. And another guy who is kind of along that line for me is Jaren Grant. And Grant looked all right, but I he's a guy who I felt like, I was like, man, he's been on the radar forever. He'll turn 24 before the season starts.
Yeah, I didn't realize that he was like an old rookie last year. I thought he was just like a normal senior age. His jumper still looks broken from three. He had one game, I think, where he was 0-for-7. And he did throw some unbelievable passes, actually, in the pick and roll or on back doors that I was very impressed by. And he has, with his athleticism, some defensive potential. So I think he is someone who could turn into an okay backup point guard. I mean, you're never going to get, as a guy who can run a pick and roll okay, find guys, get to the rim and finish on occasion. Yeah, you can probably just go under on him all the time, but he's a backup point guard and who could be an above average defender maybe as, and that, you know, in a backup, you're not going to get a two way backup point guard. So I think he can turn out to be okay. And on a rookie contract as an older guy, that's not the end of the world. And I was really impressed by his vision to the point where I wasn't quite sure that he had that type of vision. So that at least was encouraging, but you would have liked to have seen a little bit more development with the shooting.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that it's good to have him on your roster because he could, there's certainly the capability that he could grow into more than he is right now. And that's part of the reason why it would have been nice to see him on the Knicks where he wouldn't have had that pressure to be good right away. And you could say the Bulls with Rondo, maybe the same thing. But yeah, he certainly deserves a place on a roster and maybe even at the low end of a rotation, depending on the team.
Yeah, although I don't think he's going to be like winning that Derrick Rose trade for the Bulls anytime soon. Let's talk about the Cavs. They had two guys really of note. Kay Felder out of Oakland. He is Draymond Green's boy from Michigan. He's kind of been pumping up a little bit. Isaiah Thomas is the comp for him. The big difference between Felder and Thomas is I think Thomas is a little bit better of an athlete. And also Felder is all left hand all the time, can't really finish it all with his right, can't really even go right, whereas Thomas is great with both hands. Felder does have kind of longer arms than his size. I think he's listed at 5'9", and he'll pressure the ball up. He's strong, so you're not going to just like instantly destroy him in the post. But his fit in Cleveland is a little bit questionable. It's certainly in the early term.
I don't think that he, like, when I watched him, I went, oh, that's a guy, you know, he's capable enough. But then you think about where Cleveland is, and it's like, oh, well, could he play any minutes in, let's say, a conference finals or an NBA finals game? And the answer is not anytime in the near term. I mean, maybe if he develops in a year or two, he could be there. And why this is a problem is because Cleveland lost their backup point guard, even though Dele didn't play much in the finals. It's now Kyrie Irving, who of course has his injury history, Mo Williams, who both has some injury history and is old, and Kay Felder, who is certainly limited in this stage. And so when you have the expectations that Cleveland does, that is a scary point guard group, even when you consider that LeBron James shoulders so much of the playmaking load.
Yeah, let's not be too hard on Felder. He's the 54th sure. pick. They just bought this pick. He looked about as good as you could have hoped. I mean, he looked a lot better than most of the other guys drafted around his position. That's for darn sure.
It's just a different scale for him.
Sure. No, yeah. I agree. But I mean, it just in terms of evaluating where he's at in terms of compared to expectations, I thought he did well. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. And Jordan McRae, that was the case for him as well. He worked very well off the dribble. He's, you know, think of him as sort of a gunner type. He doesn't have athleticism, but he can shoot it pretty well. A guy who might be a little bit of a better fit on another team again that kind of needs some bench scoring. You know, I don't think he's someone who can be particularly efficient in the NBA, but he can go out there and create some shots for you as sort of a poor man's Jamal Crawford type of guy.
Yeah, I like him as just a guy on your roster, and he could become, you know, become a little bit more than that. You know, on Cleveland, he'll be marginalized at this point, but he's definitely worth having around. And I do like him as a capable scorer.
Yeah, and the hope is that he could improve his defense, but he doesn't strike me as the guy who's really necessarily going to play a role. But I mean, he scored amazing. I mean, I didn't believe that he had this type of scoring in him, even in summer league. So, and that team did pretty well. I think they made it to the semifinals, a lot of that on his back from a scoring standpoint. So again, you know, we're grading on a curve for having to be a guy who was, you know, basically a fringe type of guy, late second rounder type of guy, and now has to contribute to a probable finals team. But in terms of what he was able to do compared to expectations, he was off the charts for sure. Did you see much of the Mavericks?
Yeah, I did. I watched them a couple of times early on, and the guy who stood out to me in a couple of different ways was Jonathan Gibson. And Gibson is a one of those kind of wonderful stories because he did a nice job in summer league. He had previously played in China. I believe he led them in scoring, led the Chinese league in scoring, not last year, but the year before. And he had some really huge scoring performances. I think he had 30 in one game and like 26 another. I was there when he scored. It was 28 or 30 in a game. He could shoot, but the concern for him, and I'm really happy he got a guaranteed contract, is that he turns 29 in November, which I hadn't realized he was that old. And that's not, you know, that just kind of means that he's not going to grow from here, but he's I'm happy that he's going to be on a roster because he, having somebody who can just put the ball in the bucket is very useful.
Yeah. The appeal for him is that he shoots it well from three and he shoots it off the dribble, and he's been playing with the NBA 3-point line in China. And China, while it's definitely a very weird ecosystem in a lot of ways because you have all these rules about Americans can only play a certain amount of time, the expectations that are thrust on the Americans who are there are very high, and it really makes you develop your ball skills in a way that maybe you wouldn't if you were going to go play, say, in Europe, for example. I mean, the fact that you just, that practice of just having to create a shot over and over and over and over again, he was averaging like 40 a game in China. That's something where, yeah, it's a much easier league, but I do think that that can have some benefits for this sort of player who's going to create shots. And I think they gave him, what, 3 years, starting at the rookie minimum, and the last two non-guaranteed. And he does still have some pretty good athleticism in addition to his ability to shoot it from three off the pick and roll, or, you know, quick release on spot up type of plays as well. AJ Hammond's another guy who's older. He's 24, center out of Purdue, did not look particularly athletic. The knock on him was he did not play very hard. That I felt like continued to be the case. And the other knock on him was that when he gets it in the post, it's just a 15-foot turnaround jumper, which he doesn't make often enough to be effective. He's not using power moves. He has a huge size advantage in this setting. We didn't really see him use that as much. And I wasn't really impressed by him at age 24. You know, I didn't think he was going to be that good. He wasn't that good. I don't really think that he is going to look like a guy who's going to be in a rotation anytime soon.
I actively disliked him. It bothered me because whenever, like, maybe it's because I'm a smaller guy, but it's like whenever I see a big guy who just doesn't use it, I just get a little bit bitter. And he could be better than he is. And maybe, you know, going into the equivalent, let's call it, of the basketball wilderness for a couple of years could help him, because there is certainly some natural talent there. I've watched him for years, but he needs to work harder, and he needs to improve his skill level to be even close to an NBA player.
Yeah. And Justin Anderson, he was another one of these kind of 3-and-D type of guys. I was trying to expand his game, and again, can't really go right at all. I don't think a guy that is really ever going to be handling the ball and pick and roll, certainly not as a primary initiator. Maybe if you throw the ball to the other side and you can get him where he's going from the right side to the middle to his left hand, he might be able to be effective in sort of a limited way there. But to me, it's still about his shooting. I think his defense, his athleticism is very, very impressive. And so is he going to be a 34% three-point shooter, or is he going to be a 38% three-point shooter? That's going to make the difference about whether he's really going to be a very good starter, or whether he's going to just sort of be, all right, more of a, you know, wing off the bench type of guy. And he's 23 in November, so I think he came out after his junior year, so not like too old. I think he still has plenty of time to refine his game still.
Yeah, he's fine. I think he's better served as a rotation guy than as a starter, at least at this point in his career. And the Mavericks rotation could actually work well for him, especially to a point if he's playing next to two guys that can handle the ball, which I expect that Dallas will spend some time with. You know, maybe it's Devin Harris and Seth Curry, Barea, whoever it's going to be. I think that could help him just in terms of getting reliable looks, and he can just work his butt off in defense and in transition, and that could help him.
All right, let's do the Nuggets, and then we'll take it to a part two, because I think we may short out both of our microphones just by kind of foaming at the mouth with how excited we are about their young guys.
Yeah. So I love their draft, and guess what? I still love those guys. I mean, Jamal Murray was one of my favorites because he can score, and something that you noted on Twitter after, and it was especially true in the later games, but it was true throughout, is he is such a talented guy at setting up his defender in pick and roll.
Yeah, he is. And most of it at this point is to get his own shot, to get to the basket, but he sets up his defender and he sets up the big. And one thing that a lot of young guys will do that really messes things up, and especially in a summer league setting, a D league setting, when you don't know the guys you're playing with very well, is they'll always go too early, and they just will get the big to get offensive fouls, or they just won't be able to get any separation. And he always sets his guy up perfectly. He'll hesitate. He'll do in and outs. He'll back out, do a fake spin, whatever he needs to do to get his guy set up. And then, what he can do is he'll get a little bit of an advantage, and then he'll just hold the big with him and then find the opening to get it to the roll guy. Really just fantastic craft in the pick and roll off the dribble. And I think that his shooting from three looked totally fine. He was able to get into the mid range and score, very intense as well. He was even able to get on the offensive glass, follow some of his misses in this setting. That may not be as possible against more athletic NBA players, but just shows you sort of the level of smarts that he has. And then defensively, he's never going to be a stopper one-on-one, but I thought, again, he showed a lot of intelligence executing the scheme, helping out on the backsides of pick and rolls, just knowing where to be, pretty decent defensive rebounding as well. Just very excited about him. Did everything that you would have hoped for. And we'll get to Buddy Hield in a little bit, but Jamal Murray, 3 years younger than Buddy Hield, outplayed him significantly in the summer league.
Yeah, and Jamal Murray is still 19. He'll turn 20 after the All-Star game this coming season. So, I mean, he's a young guy with that. And I am fascinated by how the kind of the three-guard rotation in Denver could work, because I think that Murray actually, at certain points, he looked better with the ball in his hands than when he was playing with Moutier. And so maybe that's a better kind of role for him, though he's more of a scorer in that mode than a passer. He can get better in that. And so maybe you use him more as a second unit guy while you coach him into becoming more of an off-ball guy eventually.
Yeah, and he has experience playing off the ball, coming off of screens as well. He has that ability, which we didn't see a ton of this year, to actually just rise up from three. And he also showed some deep range too, like not quite Buddy Hield type of range, but definitely like a few feet behind the NBA line. And for when you consider his age, that's a very, very impressive. Another guy who it's looking like he may not come over now, which makes sense to me as Denver, just because they have plenty of fours guys at his position. And you might as well just not start the clock on his rookie contract, get some more guys in the pipeline. But that's Juancho Hernan Gomez, who I think impressed both of us, especially with his rebounding.
He has a knack on rebounding, for being in the right place at the right time. And there are a series of different components to rebounding. I think about it as physical, you know, like whether you're big enough and can jump high enough. And then there's another part, which is positioning and just being in the right place. And that was something that I remember back when he was in college and high school. Kevin Love was really good at that. Paul Millsap was really good at that. There's also intensity in wanting it. And he's just good at that. On the offensive boards, on the defensive glass. And Kevin Pelton has talked about this well in the past, and numerous other people have as well, is that having somebody who is not only a capable jump shooter, but is a willing jump shooter is a bigger benefit, because you have to be cognizant of it.
Yeah, I thought that was really impressive. Just his ability to stick his nose in there. He's got more athleticism than the typical stretch four. I thought his ability to make plays off the dribble was impressive. He had a couple of plays. Like, one that stuck out to me was he got the ball swung to him, and instead of taking the three, he had a guy who was like sort of open in the corner. And so he pass faked it to that guy, made his defender jump to that pass out of position. And then he was able to get right to the basket and kind of snake his way through for a dunk, which was really impressive. His jumper was not really on. He had some bad misses, which is kind of what we saw in the film from him playing in Spain. Also, he is certainly willing to take it. He gets it off quickly. I don't know if he's going to be a guy who's going to be a 40% three-point shooter in the league, but a guy who will probably make 35% at least, and that's enough for the type of player that he is. So just high-quality kid as well. He and his brother, both people rave about where they're at from a locker room standpoint. So just looking like another steal for Denver. And then another guy who I don't want to talk about him too much, because he's kind of an end of the bench type of guy, but who has improved a little bit, is Axel Toupin, another guy I saw a couple of years in a row at the Euro camp, both playing for the French under 20 national team and then in the camp itself. He has really improved his ball skills and his strength quite a bit, and just a guy to keep an eye on a little. And actually, some people I talked to from the D League as well sort of sung his praises from playing against him when he was playing for Raptors 905 last year. And now, of course, he's on the Nuggets. I thought he was good. And then Moutier, the one game that he played, I thought he was excellent in that game too. His jumper looked better.
So I'll mention two things. One on Moutier, because I saw him for Team USA. The thing that stood out to me is that he just seems big for a point guard. You know, like physically, I think he's getting a little bit stronger, and just with his height, that's always nice. And his jumper doesn't look broken. Like because I watched him, that was actually
one of the few. He's not shooting on the way down as much, it looked like to me.
Yeah, it's better there. And then also, just for my own moral reasons, I can't let us go by this without talking about Peter Cornelly, because my love for French big men. I think that he looked good. I don't think they should bring him over this year, but I see an eventual rotation player in him. He moves reasonably well. He has a decent sense, and his jumper is interesting. It's not perfect. It's not great, but it's definitely on there, and he plays pretty hard. Like, I think he's not there yet, but getting him at, I think it was 53 in the draft, I think that could work out really well for them, considering they gave up, you know, what they got him for.
Yeah, he's got a lot of length. Look good as a pick and roll guy, finishing with dunks. He's obviously got to get stronger. He's really skinny, and he took threes. He didn't make threes, but he took them, and had some bad misses. But at least you figure if you're a 7-footer taking those shots, you must have some expectations of being able to make them. So he's an intriguing guy as someone who has the potential to protect the rim and also can shoot the ball. That's one of those guys that you don't see a ton of. And I wasn't really very familiar with him at all. He is extremely skinny, so that probably would be the biggest limiting factor potentially for him getting to be, you know, a real high level of guy. But I mean, when you can potentially shoot threes and you're 7 foot and you can jump and you're have some level of coordination, I mean, that's a great pick in the 50s, like you said. All right, you got anything to plug before we go?
Yes, I did a podcast with our mutual friend Kevin Pelton of ESPN Insider about Summer League, and then we, as the two of us do, wandered into many other topics, including kind of Spurs versus Jazz, which is one of my favorite things that I started thinking about during Summer League, and a couple other topics.
Oh yeah, can I weigh in on that? Because I listened to that podcast. I think anyone who's thinking that Utah can be better in any respect than the Spurs is crazy. I like the Spurs won 67 games last year, and yeah, they lost Tim Duncan, but and I guess they lost Dia too. But Gasol is going to help them offensively. The Jazz don't have anyone close to the level of LaMarcus Aldridge or Kawhi Leonard, and the Jazz won what 40 games last year, and yeah, George Hill is going to help that. I think the Jazz could get to 50, but I fully expect the Spurs to be like high 50s, low 60s this year.
I will draw a distinction that I did inartfully in the podcast, which is that I'm not considering this as a regular season thing. I fully expect the Spurs to finish with a better record. I'm thinking already about the playoffs and thinking about, I think they might be, they're not there yet, of course, because they have to prove a lot more than the Spurs do. They could end up being the second toughest out in the Western Conference. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, I don't think so there either, because I think the Jazz big strength is their depth. And if the Spurs play their good players way more minutes, that would really just make them could exacerbate the gap in the playoffs rather than reduce it. But we can disagree on that one. But when I thought that, I was like, oh man, like the Spurs are just like, that was, they had like a plus 10 point differential last year. Like we've forgotten already how good the Warriors were in the regular season last year. And we've really forgotten how good the Spurs were.
I think that they're just going to be a fundamentally different team. I also worry about age with them. I mean, that's something for me that just not, of course, with their, you know, with Kawhi and guys like that, but Powell and Tony Parker, like this is, we talked last year about the idea of shot creation being an issue for them. And they did well with it. They did well enough to survive, though I think we both thought that would rear its head in the playoffs, and it did. So that's a little bit different. But yeah, I think they're going to have the second best record in the West. They're the odds on favorite for that. And I will not question that at all. I just think that that's not as interesting a question as in terms of, like, you know, the long-term thing. And then of course the Clippers are in this conversation as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And even Memphis, if they get all their guys back again, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this. I haven't even begun to wrap my head around where we think everyone's going to end up yet. So, all right, that'll do it for today. Don't forget about our sponsors, SeatGeek. Use that cap space code for $20 rebate off of your first purchase. And of course, the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner, naked.fit, FIT/capspace. Remember, it's always capspace, either the URL in the case of the fitness tracker or the code in the case of SeatGeek. Programming note, we'll probably be back in a couple of days with part two of this one. We'll get through all the rest of the teams in the same level of detail. Then we're actually got a couple of interesting podcasts. One thing I wanted to do is we did grades for the 2015 offseason, kind of around August of last year. And I wanted to go back and look at what those grades were and kind of see what we got right, what we got wrong, what our reasoning was, just as kind of a prelude, because then I think we'll do the same thing again for this year. And then maybe if you want to send me some ideas for topics kind of during this down period, that'd be cool too. We're thinking of maybe doing best and worst contracts since the lockout as kind of a companion to our worst trade since the lockout that we did last year. We'll do our tiers as well. And then before we know it, it's going to be time to preview all 30 teams as well. So thanks for staying with us here on the Dunk Down Basketball Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. And we appreciate, of course, your iTunes reviews or ratings or sharing of the podcast on social media or anything else that you can do to support the pod. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much. We'll be back in a few days. Till then.